Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here's your host, Joe Kuzma.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name is Joe Kuzma, and today we're here to preview the unbeaten Pittsburgh Steelers at 7-0, facing and traveling to Dallas to face the 2-6 Dallas Cowboys. And we have a very special guest host with us today, Orlando Skandrick. I believe 11-year veteran in the NFL, Orlando, and almost all of those years with the Dallas Cowboys and now of the Believe in Cowboys podcast. How are you doing today?
Doing good. Just a small correction. 12-year.
Oh, 12-year. Okay.
10 years in Dallas, a year in Kansas City, and a year in Philadelphia.
All right.
I'm doing great. Looking forward to seeing the Pittsburgh-Dallas matchup, but not because I think it's going to be – just this hell of a game. I'm just looking forward to seeing Pittsburgh. You know, being a defensive player my whole life, being a former defensive back in the NFL for over a decade, just you have to admire what the Pittsburgh Steelers are doing from a rushing cover standpoint. They really, really get after the passer really well. And on the back end, they cover you up. They got some physical defensive backs, some really, really tough, hard-nosed defensive backs. I really enjoy watching Minkah Fitzpatrick. Steven Nelson being an old teammate of mine, I really enjoy watching the maturation process and the growth of him. And then just the consistency and the time that Joe Hayden has put in. Joe spent a lot of years in Cleveland, a lot of bad seasons, but he just played and played and played. He got an opportunity to get in a good organization, on a good team. And, you know, now just to finally see, like, they really got a chance at this thing. I just enjoy watching it. And then, from the offense perspective, I really enjoy watching Ben Roethlisberger. He's been there a long time. He's a very, very, I'll say, hardworking guy. Doesn't say too much. Tries to, you know, keep a low profile. Although, you know, everybody makes their mistakes. And, you know, Ben's been through some trials and tribulations and some ups and downs. But just to see him come back and, you know, this team to be undefeated, I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, and, you know, this is kind of a tough situation to have you come on as a guest and, you know, also being a former Cowboy, I don't want to put you in a position where you say anything bad about the team, but obviously the big glaring mark here, the Cowboys have struggled in different areas over the 2020 season thus far, also a new coach with Mike McCarthy, but injuries have really taken their toll on this team, and in particular the hot button question this Sunday is who's going to be playing quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. We saw Andy Dalton come in after Dak Prescott went down. Andy Dalton went on the COVID reserve list, and then he was hurt too. Obviously, he took that dirty hit. So what is it, seventh rounder rookie Ben DiNucci? You know, he's from Pittsburgh area, and you know, he at least gets to watch from the sidelines. It may be growing up as a Steelers fan, I might assume from that area. But from what we're hearing is Ben DiNucci, even though he played last week, is not going to be the guy this week. We're looking at two other players. Correct me if I'm wrong here. It is Garrett Gilbert and Cooper Rush. Can you tell me a little bit as far as your knowledge or experience or what you know about these guys? I know Gilbert was with the Browns for a little bit last year after being in the AAF, the Alliance of American Football, and Cooper Rush is a guy that's been on and off the Cowboys roster. This is kind of a mystery for the Steelers. I don't know if this plays well into the hands of the Cowboys or not, and I'm not exactly sure who gives them the best opportunity to compete with this undefeated Steelers squad.
To go back to Garrett Gilbert, I know Garrett Gilbert's from Texas area. I know he played at Oklahoma State. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know much about him. I know he was an undrafted free agent. Same with Coop. Coop was my teammate for, I want to say, 2 years. And he went to Central Michigan. They're both, you know, third string guys that are forced to be one a starter and one a backup. But I don't think – it doesn't really matter which guy it is. Dallas Cowboys are banged up on the offensive line. The Pittsburgh Steelers 100% get after you up front, like to make teams one-dimensional. They take the ball away, and I mean, I would look to see possibly Garrett Gilbert because he's been there. But also, I wouldn't be surprised if I seen Cooper Rush. It's a bit of a mystery to me that you don't re-sign a guy in Cooper Rush in the offseason. At some point you thought Ben DiNucci was going to be better suited for your third spot. Maybe they thought they could develop him. Cooper goes and he follows the old head coach and new offensive coordinator, Jason Garrett. He follows him to the Giants. That doesn't work out. Cowboys bring him over to the practice squad, you know, just thinking maybe he would be the backup. And then you go up to Philadelphia and you see an awful showing from Ben DiNucci. He's just not ready. I'm not sure he will ever be ready. I didn't see anything from him in a game time situation that showed me he's a possible or potential backup quarterback. He looks like he was in over his head all night. And here you are playing against a much, much better Pittsburgh Steelers team. So, you know, it wasn't okay to try him out there. And you look at it and say, if you played DiNucci ahead of Garrett Gilbert, where's Garrett Gilbert at this point? So I think, you know, Pittsburgh, I look for Pittsburgh as long as they come out, you know, and they don't come out flat. And, you know, they approach this game like they've approached every other game. And, you know, you don't want to have a letdown because coming out of Baltimore and that showing that they put on in Baltimore. But also I look at it from a player perspective. They started slow in Baltimore and, you know, they picked it up towards the end and they really finished strong. And it can go two ways. Are they going to have a little bit of a hangover or do they come out and pick up where they left out in Baltimore? And I tell you this, good teams in the NFL, how you know you're really a good team, you have to beat the bad teams. And I think, you know, in that locker room and being in an NFL locker room for 10 years in Dallas, been in an NFL locker room and other years, other places, you're saying to yourselves, don't give him any hope. You know what you do to a wounded dog? You put it out of his misery.
I could tell you that, you know, all of Steelers Nation, any of the other viewers and listeners out there tuning in here, they're still concerned, I'm sure, with this game because there's been a reputation over the years, even though Mike Tomlin has never had a losing season, there seems to be a stigma of playing down to teams based either on their record or, as you say, like a wounded dog. And it's very difficult to see exactly where this may turn south for the Steelers if it were to turn south. And that's why I said it's kind of tough to talk about this. When you talk about a game like with the Ravens, you're talking about, you know, two of the teams, rivals, they play each other a lot. There's a lot of history here with the Cowboys, and that's why this was basically the game being seen across America on Sunday at 4:25 with the A-team with, you know, Tony Romo and everything announcing there. All the bells and whistles, and then Dak Prescott gets hurt, and it kind of takes the steam out of this a little bit. I got to wonder, though, the biggest thing. We know the Dallas Cowboys defense has had its troubles in limiting points per game. They're dead last in the league. The offense now, with the quarterback issues, seems to have trouble putting up points. 10 against the Cardinals, 3 against the Washington football team, 9 against the Eagles, all losses in their last 3 games. They were able to, obviously, produce before that, but you know, a lot of the key components are still there. You still have Ezekiel Elliott. As most of the viewers know, I'm an Ohio State fan, so I followed Elliott all the way back to college. He's still a favorite player of mine. Steelers defense has been able to prevent some of the top running attacks in the NFL, but they also lost Devin Bush in the middle, and we saw what the Ravens did to exploit that to a certain degree last Sunday. The Steelers also, they've been just going through a grind. They've been playing a juggernaut of teams, the Browns, the Titans, and then the Ravens, and that's got to take a little bit out of you too. What do you think are the top keys? Should the Cowboys be able to be competitive in this game? How do they face the Steelers? How do they remain in this game? How do they potentially win it? What do you think the keys of the games are?
I think the Cowboys have slim to none chance in winning this game. I think if I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, I look to just make the Cowboys one-dimensional. I load the box early. I try to score early and often. The Cowboys have a bad recipe for playing football right now. They haven't scored a touchdown in almost 3 games. So basically we'll call it 2.5 games, and they can't stop a nosebleed. So I look for Pittsburgh, you know, to score early, make the Cowboys one-dimensional. You put it on the shoulder of Cooper Rush, or Garrett Gilbert, and I look for them to potentially get ran out of their own stadium if the Mike Tomlin and the Steelers decide to. And you know, the Cowboys don't do anything well on defense. They do nothing well on defense fundamentally. I think they're going to have some, they're looking at some tough matchups with Chase Claypool really, really coming on, with Johnson really coming on. And then it just allows Juju to go where he's most comfortable and when he had his most success, which is in the slot. And you move him around for situational plays. Then when you throw in the running game and the screen game with James Conner, you know, this is a bad matchup for Dallas, and this could get ugly early.
Yeah, I mean, I guess on the defensive end, at least, a healthy Leighton Vander Esch, right? I mean, that was someone that was missing for a few of those games in between. It seems like there were some players maybe released and some things getting shuffled around to try and find guys who are hungry to play and that are going to contribute. And I still see guys on the Dallas offense that could still cause problems. And the Steelers were definitely in this position last year with injuries, the quarterback situation. They had Mason Rudolph, Duck Hodges, when Ben Roethlisberger went down. So, you know, Steelers fans are no stranger to this as well as struggling on offense. It just seems like you need a guy that's going to be able to manage the game, maybe get Zeke going a little bit if you can, and then maybe find some of these guys like Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, CeeDee Lamb. I mean, like you said,
these guys can't throw it to themselves.
Yeah, they all quarterback driven, right?
They can't throw it to themselves. And even when you did have Mason and Duck, you were able to win some games. You were able to stay competitive. The Cowboys have not shown that they can stay competitive at all. At all. And then you talk about you want to get Zeke going, but, you know, you look at you're missing your left tackle, your all-pro left tackle. Mm-hmm. You're missing your right tackle. Your all-pro and Pro Bowl center retired before the season started. So now what do you – all you have is your all-pro right guard and then a bunch of fill-ins. Your left guard is a guy that you drafted high, but he missed all last season with an ACL, and he hasn't even scratched the surface of what you thought he was going to be. And your center is a rookie. This is tough.
Yeah, and you know, it pains me because I was very excited to have you here. I'm very excited that you joined us on this show to give some of your, you know, your view, your expertise. And it's just, I'm trying to find something where a lot of people accuse us a lot of times of being biased and homers, but it's very difficult in this matchup because it just seems like the Cowboys are just a shell of what they could have been. And you had mentioned, you know, having all of these injuries along or even the retirement along the offensive line, it really all begins there. And it's really hard to get a lot of things going, you know, especially when your quarterback's getting chased around. The run game maybe doesn't get what it needs to get. And, you know, I was just trying to find some type of silver lining there. So what I hope is, and a lot of people like to use the word trap game. I'm not sure if you believe in this at all. I don't necessarily see the Steelers looking ahead at the Bengals next week. I don't think they're going to overlook the Cowboys in that sense that they're looking ahead to another opponent. But is there a sense of maybe the shark smelling the blood in the water, maybe getting a little too big of a head or too full of yourself entering one of these games?
Listen, the Pittsburgh Steelers are a much better football team than the Washington football team. They're also a much better football team and showing as the head-to-head than the Philadelphia Eagles. They're a much better football team than the Arizona Cardinals. The Dallas Cowboys are an onside kick away, an onside bouncing kick away from being 1-7. Their fourth quarter meltdown away from being 0-8. Now, if you think that this team is going to find some secret sauce and magically turn into a different team overnight, that's just not the way the NFL works. Sure, they have some good players. They have some really good players. But they're lacking heart. They have a lot of players that are not performing. They have a lot of defensive players that are not performing. In particular, you expected more from Jalen Smith. Leighton Vander Esch has come on lately, but his thing, his whole career has been, is he able to stay on the field? You have some really, really – it's an iffy secondary. You have a young, talented Diggs, but then you have some average safeties. You have an average corner on the other side. It's just not – Pittsburgh is clicking. And they're going somewhere, and the Dallas Cowboys are just in the way.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate because, I mean, you got some players like DeMarcus Lawrence, Aldon Smith. You mentioned Diggs, Jalen Smith. There's definitely some guys here that are definitely talented and deserve better than, you know, what has come. so far this season. And, you know, I have family down in I don't think I mentioned this off air, but I have family down in Dallas too. And it's just it's kind of rough. I know from all the years of needling and getting into it with Cleveland Browns fans, having been born and raised in Northeast Ohio, you have a split between Pittsburgh and Cleveland fans there. And, you know, I don't even know what to say in this type of instance, but, you know, we've seen the Cowboys do some things in the past. You know, I think the Steelers have lost like the last two or three there. I know the last one that was in your building, I believe that was Tony Romo back in 2012. And then, of course, there was an invasion of Cowboys fans and I don't even know how many lead changes the last time they played, 2016, I believe, at Heinz Field.
I was on both of those teams. I was on both of those teams.
Yeah, so that's where I was going with that. To get a little bit of story, at least from you, from those two games and your matchups with the Steelers.
2012, we were a little banged up, but, you know, we were able to pull that one out in overtime. I remember that. It was a young Antonio Brown.
What was that like?
It was a young Emmanuel Sanders. And, you know, it was a younger Ben Roethlisberger. He had Le'Veon Bell. And then you go to 2020, where that one was, we had a young Dak Prescott and then a Zeke Elliott. And we were going back and forth a little bit. It was, anybody knows anything about Pittsburgh Steelers football, when they play home, they really score well. Their defense wasn't as good back then. But now, you know, you don't even – I look at that defense and none of those guys are on that defense. There's no Sean Davis. There's no Will Gay. There's no I think it was Artie
Jarvis
Burns.
Jarvis Jones was a big one.
There's no Artie Burns. I think there's Hayward still there.
Yes.
But two totally different teams, two totally different organizations, very storied franchises at this point going in different directions.
Yeah, and that is unfortunate. I'm actually trying to think if that was the year Hayward was hurt and maybe even out of that game, because Steelers couldn't stop the run to save their lives. In fact, that was the game-winning touchdown, was, I think, a 30-some yard run by Elliott back then. And, you know, it's just one of those things where these guys have Super Bowl history between them, obviously, and, you know, the Cowboys are called America's team, and I think the Steelers fans take a little bit of offense. I think anybody takes offense to that when you put that title on there. It puts a target on your back, but it's great hearing some stories, and, you know, let me ask you a little bit then, since there isn't a whole lot of positive to come on the Cowboys end of it. You were mentioning earlier, we were talking offline, you're still very good friends with former teammate you played with in Kansas City and Steven Nelson. He is a favorite of ours here. We were very excited about that signing last offseason, and it looked like, for all intents and purposes, he's every bit as good as he just doesn't get the attention that somebody like Stephon Gilmore or even his own teammate Joe Hayden gets. What are your impressions on your friend Steven Nelson?
Steve's a good player, man. Progressively got better and better. Plays with a chip on his shoulder. He doesn't get the credit, you know, but he's a good, solid player. He's still very young. He's somewhere that he's happy. He's in a good system. I'm super happy for him. We never really talk about, like, if he's as good as Gilmore, if he's as good as Patrick Peterson, this person. We just talk about getting better and getting better, and that's something that I have watched Steve do. He's gotten better, but he's a winner, man. He came from Kansas City where they won the AFC West Championship, the West Division every year. And just to come to Pittsburgh and now be back to winning, I know he's happy. I know he's happy where he's at, and I'm just happy for him.
Absolutely, and that's always great. We always talk about football being family. I know we're up against it. We all appreciate your time and taking some time out of your day joining us here on the Steel City Underground podcast. Tell us some ways we can follow you, and I'm not sure if there's any other like community efforts and some other things you're involved in that you would like to tell us about.
Host of the Believe Cowboys podcast on the Believe Network. You can feel free at any time to listen in. As far as that, I'm just a football fan at this point in my career, and I'm just enjoying and looking forward to watching on Sunday.
Okay, Steelers Nation, that was Orlando Scandrick, formerly of the Dallas Cowboys for a large portion of his career, and then a couple years spent also with Kansas City and the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, it's really a tough position to be put in my chair when you're talking from the opposing side of view. And, you know, I think a lot of us are looking at this game as almost a gimme this week. This Sunday, I can tell you that, you know, no matter who the Cowboys end up putting on the field, you can't take it for granted with the parity that exists here in the NFL. As they say, any given Sunday, you never know, knock on wood, that someone doesn't get hurt on the Steelers' end, that it would be a main contributor. You don't have any type of turnovers. Maybe you get a little too overconfident and make some mistakes that could, you know, cost you scoring in the red zone. Penalties, things of that nature, only kicking field goals and not finishing off drives. There's a lot of things that could still be in play here. Unfortunately for Dallas, they don't have, as you heard Orlando speak here just moments ago, there's not a whole lot going for them. They're 24th in points scored as far as their offense, which would probably be almost dead last if not for having Dak Prescott for a few of those games. And even with Dak Prescott, as you heard, there was that crazy, if you remember, I think it was week 3, the crazy onside kick where nobody touched the ball and it was a live ball. And it was a pretty cool kick. Go back and look at that. And then an overtime victory against the New York Giants. The Cowboys still have a threat in someone such as Ezekiel Elliott. However, Ezekiel Elliott has just... It hasn't been working. It hasn't been working. Even going back to, you go back to like week 3 against Seattle, 14 carries for 34 yards, 12 carries against Cleveland Browns for only 54 yards. He had the big game against the Giants. He hasn't run for 100 yards the entire season, but he had the 2-touchdown game, 91 yards against the Giants. Since then, 12 carries for 49 against Arizona, 12 for 45 against Washington, and 19 for 63 against the Philadelphia Eagles. He has been relied on a little bit in the passing game, mostly dump off passes. He was targeted 10 times against the Cardinals with Andy Dalton in as the quarterback there, but only 8 for 31. It's just really rough to see a perennial all-pro player like this and behind a battered offensive line missing what was projected to be 3 starters entering, you know, at least entering the off season. They weren't necessarily expecting to have injuries, have players that opt out or retire. And the big one was on March 23rd was Travis Frederick, which I believe was a couple of weeks after the free agency period started. It's a really tough uphill climb for this Dallas Cowboys team, a team with a lot of history as well, and a huge fan base that travels just as well as Steelers Nation. I almost feel sympathetic for what might come because, unfortunately, on the flip side of trying to just be impartial and unbiased, I have a prediction article over on SteelCityUnderground.com saying the Steelers are going to drop 40. At least 40 on this team, and I don't see how it doesn't happen. You saw the Steelers, even though last week they had their struggles against the Baltimore Ravens, the Ravens even maybe getting a couple guys hurt on along that offensive line. It's the scheme and system and the coaching, and we heard Orlando Scandrick speak to that too, and it was also a new system with this COVID-influenced offseason. It probably didn't do any favors for Mike McCarthy and his crew. There's a lot of carryover from maybe some bad tastes from the previous coaching staff, some of the management and things that are going on there. So it's a turnover year for the Cowboys. You also had Dak Prescott playing on a franchise tag as well. And that whole situation, it's just a mess there. It's very difficult to see how the Steelers don't just run away with this particular game. I'm trying to pull up some different statistics and some different things for you guys here at this moment since I'm flying solo here otherwise without Orlando. tried to get him on even just yesterday, and just, you know how it is. It's the life of an NFL player or former NFL player. These guys, it's a busy season, for even busier for those guys as it is for someone like myself or Brian. So I just don't see the same type of potency as you would see with the Baltimore Ravens rushing for 265 yards. It's going to be along the same line of, they're not going to let Ezekiel Elliott kill them here. The Steelers will be bottling up the run like we've seen them do against guys like Saquon Barkley, Melvin Gordon, and others, and even Derrick Henry. And that team's a lot more polished there in the Tennessee Titans, but still, they lost to a Cincinnati Bengals team last week as well. So you try to at least put a lid on it and go out there and make sure that business is done. But at the same time, you got to realize that the Steelers were down 17-7 at halftime against the Baltimore Ravens, and the offense finally started clicking. You had an 18-yard pass to Eric Ebron for a touchdown. You also had James Conner cap off what could have been a Chase Claypool touchdown there with the big play. Chase Claypool got his on a fantastic thread-the-needle pass from Ben Roethlisberger with about 7.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. That was a barrage of 21 points in those three drives. Not every single drive a scoring drive. However, three scoring drives in the second half. If the Steelers put together three scoring drives in at least one of these halves, I think we're going to see some of Chris Boswell on short fields. If the Cowboys are not able to move the needle a little bit on that gridiron, the Steelers are going to be afforded some tremendous field position. I imagine that there's going to be a lot of possession-type plays with James Conner. I think we'll see Benny Snell, who didn't play a snap last week. Anthony McFarland gets one snap, one carry, as we saw. He got maybe a little too giddy or excited or whatever he saw, slipped, fell. We're going to see these guys, I think, mixed in. I think we're going to see the Steelers, if this ends up being a rout, we may even see Mason Rudolph get in the game in the fourth quarter for maybe two or three series. We know that Ben Roethlisberger doesn't like to come off the field, but I could almost imagine that James Conner's going to be off the field. You got to rest some of these studs. They may even do the same. Paul Pouncey, who's had some nagging injuries. David DeCastro has been banged up. Don't forget, their bye week was stolen from them with the whole COVID situation with the Tennessee Titans. They have come out of several wars with two very good football teams, in my opinion, between the Titans and the Ravens. Don't forget anything, even though they dominated the Cleveland Browns 3 weeks ago, Cleveland Browns were coming in, riding the tide, riding high, a new team, some new talent, some new coaches, and trying to put that thing together and competitive. But the Steelers dominated that game in every aspect, more or less, because Cleveland just did not play well at all. But still, an AFC North battle, you're talking three games, three slugfests back to back to back. The tank might be running on empty a little bit, and I think they're going to be looking ahead, too, to make sure they take care of business against the Bengals team next week that will have a bye week, and they just won a game against Tennessee as well, which has got to open your eyes up just a little bit, provided that game will be played at Heinz Field and in front of some fans. So, in summation, for the most part, folks, like I said, the 40 points, I think you're going to see some field goals from Chris Boswell because, like I said, you're not going to have perfection. Even for Ben Roethlisberger to throw and complete 70% of his passes, that could be on a third down. You could be somewhere in the 30-ish yard line, bring out Boswell, 40-ish yard field goal, something of that nature. Maybe not a 50-ish, but I think you get the idea of what I'm talking about, where the field doesn't move depending on Garrett Gilbert or Cooper Rush. Apparently, they really like Cooper Rush. It's just a matter of, Garrett Gilbert is a guy that he lit it up in the Alliance of American Football. Orlando wasn't as familiar with him because he did play with Cooper Rush. And I guess Cooper Rush does have some leadership qualities, but it does kind of set off some bells and whistles. I mean, the Steelers kept Duck Hodges on their practice squad, an expanded practice squad, but did not have Cooper Rush there until just recently with the rash of injuries. And then they picked up Garrett Gilbert, who was released, I believe, by the Cleveland Browns, or may have just been on the practice squad there. He was with their team last year, and by virtue of what happened in the Alliance of American Football and his performance, I can't say necessarily for sure if that will translate. But you got to think, if a guy can pick up a couple first downs, some trickeration, this may be a team of desperation of, you know, what's left? What do we have to lose? Go for it on fourth down. Really press their nose against the wall and give the Steelers a little bit of a challenge. I'm not saying that it's necessarily what will happen. This very well could be a handily beatdown, smackdown, whatever you want to call it, by the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's what we're all expecting. I'm not saying that's what we should necessarily get. Here's one other aspect to throw into this as well as I look at this stuff. On the road for the third straight week, and you get Tony Corrente, who is the Jesse Caudet referee, who is the guy who puts on his reading glasses when he goes to the replay booth. So don't expect any favors from the officiating crew, but you just never know how they may get involved, how these things may stay a little closer than you would like if certain penalties get called. I've been watching most of the games that Corrente has been officiating throughout. He's been had a lot of primetime games. I'm going to pull a couple of them up and see his let's see if we got some current statistics, because believe it or not, they keep statistics on the referees as well. So I got to go all the way down. I'm trying to see the last time that he had the Steelers. Oh, he had the Steelers and Bills last year, too, if that doesn't irk you enough. And, yeah, he's not necessarily one of the favorite referees for Steelers Nation to end up seeing on the football field. The year before, he had in 2018, he had that Week 5 stinker between the Steelers and Ravens. That was well before Joe Flacco was fired as a starting quarterback there. And he also had that game against the Denver Broncos in Denver. If you don't forget, Xavier Grimble, the fumble and the touchback and just the shenanigans that went on even in that game. Be ready if you still have hair, unlike me, to pull it out. This guy might drive you a little bit crazy. But the officiating crews here, at least his crews, you're probably looking anywhere on an average of about 5 penalties to each side this season. It doesn't necessarily break down who the penalties were. There's 4 and against here, obviously. There's 5 against the Bengals, 7 against the Browns, 5 against the Bears, 7 against the Saints. So it seems like they've leaned against throwing some flags against the home teams, all but the opener. The games that he has had, Rams and Cowboys, Cowboys were penalized 5 times for 34 yards. Really nothing else to speak of here. Ravens, Texans, that wasn't much. Panthers, Chargers, Chiefs, and Patriots, which also didn't necessarily turn out to be the game you would expect. Seahawks and Vikings, for those of you who saw it. And, of course, the game that was, the primetime game, what was that? Was that the I'm trying to think. Was that the Thursday night game from the – oh, no, that was the game that was moved to Tuesday. No, that was last Sunday. Never mind. I'm sorry. The Bears and Saints. But if you did see that, I know I was watching and I was trying to figure out what day that was on. But anyways – Tony Corrente is considered one of the top officials, unfortunately, in this league. And I hate to dedicate so much time to just speaking about a referee. I probably can go in like 5 minutes already, but you should feel at least fortunate that the opponent here is thought to be a doormat in the league right now. And his influence should be next to nil when it comes to determining a winner or a loser here, hopefully. So just cross your fingers, knock on wood, knock right there. Not just a hat rack. I try to tell my kid that, but she doesn't listen. So I just knocked on my head for those of you who are not watching on YouTube. But if you are, don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. I'd also like to, again, say a thank you to my special guest, the co-host of today's show from the Believe in Cowboys podcast, Orlando Skandrick. There's a guy that many of you may remember in free agency, talking about maybe bringing in to help the Steelers shore up their secondary when that was still a problem. Very cool to hear his relationship and stories with Steven Nelson. He's got one that he wasn't allowed to say on air, but that's kind of cool. That's between me and these walls, as Mike Tomlin would say. And just closing out with that, I guess the Steelers get fined for not wearing masks or something. Maybe it pulled them down at the end of the game or whatever be the case. Things are out of control. Raiders are losing draft picks over it. Their repeat offender, we know that Gruden and company already got smacked with that earlier in the year. So we'll tend to see how this continues to go. At least the Steelers haven't been affected largely their games since the Tennessee incident, which didn't involve them at all because they hadn't played Tennessee yet, but that was their upcoming opponent. And they haven't really had to do a whole lot of remote meetings or anything of that nature. So they should still be a finely tuned, well-oiled machine. I know they probably have a little chip on their shoulder from the way their offense has underperformed beginning of the Baltimore game last week and then part of that Titans game. And they took the ball against the Titans just to prove, look, we're going to finally score on one of these open. We're going to break this streak. We're going to score on an opening drive. and we're going to shut everyone up, and we're going to put our foot on the gas pedal and control this game. I don't necessarily see them being as aggressive against the Cowboys, but I don't know that they need to be as aggressive. As you heard, the Cowboys have had they can't stop a cold. He said they can't stop a nosebleed, and it's very unfortunate. And on the offensive side of the ball, you know, Travis Frederick and all of these other guys that are gone from what was maybe the second great wall of Dallas. It's going to be hard opening holes for Ezekiel Elliott. I know the Steelers are still dealing with a little bit of injuries on their end. I should talk to that before I sign off here, so let me pull this up. We have, I know, Tyson Alualu was the big one, but not only that, you still have Chris Wormley on IR, and Isaiah Bugs went from a limited practice with an ankle on Wednesday to a DNP, not practicing on Thursday. The Friday status is still up in the air at the time of this recording. It also would appear that, well, Mike Hilton is limited in practice with that shoulder injury. I would not anticipating them rushing him back for this game. Stefan Wisniewski is still a DNP with pectoral injury that he was on IR, but they have, I think, activated him within the 21-day window, and then they will figure out whether to bring him back fully here in the future. I just see the glaring weakness here, and the Steelers a lot of times kind of that pseudo four-man front, right? You got Hayward and Tuitt, you got Bud Dupree and T.J. Watt. But no Tyson Alualu has been playing his mind out. And in Bugs, second half against the Ravens, two huge stops on that final drive. Everybody remembers that highlight where they didn't get the first down on that fourth and one, fourth and two. So I'm not exactly sure who they're going to pluck to put into this position here, because, like I said, with Alualu, Wormley, and now Bugs, potentially all out. Of course, he could be limited in a game time decision and still be out there. We're talking maybe, I'll tell you what he ended up playing last week. I'm going to guess he was in the 30 snap range if he was at that. Still, this isn't a team that highly, 34, that was 41%. And we're talking about this against the Ravens. So you're seeing a little more traditional 3-4. I don't know you'll see traditional 3-4 against the Cowboys team that's going to at least probably go three wide quite a bit often with those weapons. Like I said, Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, who many people don't think of on, we're outside the Pittsburgh bubble. Some people don't necessarily think of him, but still, quality wide receiver, rookie CeeDee Lamb operates out of the slot a lot. And that's where you might be missing Mike Hilton. So just looking at some of the matchups that could potentially be a problem. But, Bugs playing 34 of the snaps last week. Alualu only got 6. But you're still talking Alualu participation. Only one game against the Tennessee Titans, trying to slow down Derrick Henry, where he played more than half of the snaps. Most of the snaps that he's involved in the 40-ish range. Going to try and figure out how they might work this in. I think we're going to see some of Mondo out there. He looked kind of Henry Mondo looked like a guy. He looks like Hagrid, like I said. He could be Hagrid Mondo, which is what I almost said. I was trying to figure out if he was Harry or Henry. Now I've been watching all these Harry Potter movies with my daughter, and I got Harry in my head. But the flowing long hair, he's going to be the guy that's probably going to have to step up here. They're razor thin at this position. I'm not sure if they'll end up calling up someone else from the practice squad here in order to play in here. We may even see Carlos Davis, who has been largely inactive and played 2 snaps last week for his first action. He's the rookie 7th rounder defensive lineman from this past draft. So I'm stumbling, I'm bumbling. That's what I'm giving you. That's the biggest things I could think about. I really just want to be excited, get to the post game, and hear that the Steelers took my prediction at heart once again and made me look like a genius. 40-plus. Not all offense, though. A little bit of Chris Boswell is going to be in there. And I do think defensively, safety, pick 6, fumble recovery, something. The defense is going to feast. They may get a score as well. So, folks, I told you earlier, don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. Appreciate your support. Buy us a beverage over at steelcityunderground.com via PayPal, where you could donate to our cause. Once again, a thank you to Orlando Skandrick for joining us today. And to all of you fine supporters that are out there, we always encourage you each and every time to be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.